Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Mean, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, hello.
Justin Robert Young.
Yo, what's up?
I'll tell you what's up is AI, guys. A lot of AI.
Wait, AI is what?
AI is cool, but you know what else is cool?
What's that?
We'll get to the AI part. I just realized the story that we didn't talk about yet because it happened while we were not on our microphones.
What's that?
Mechazilla.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The big event.
SpaceX decided to do the thing they're not supposed to do because all the experts said it wasn't going to work, wasn't practical. They wanted to try to catch the first stage from Starship. I understand the first stage booster for Starship is checks notes. Other than the secret shield helicarrier, we're not supposed to talk about the heaviest flying object on the planet. And I mean, this thing is like 2/3 of the size of a Saturn V rocket.
Yeah.
And you what gets lost in the video for even people who've seen it is this is a technical term, the effing size of the tower, of the catch tower that they built, and how huge this thing is. This thing is like, you could put the Statue of Liberty next to this. These things would be comparable in scale. And it caught the first stage. The first stage came back. The video of this is just insane. And the only thing that's just because of the landscape, you don't get a sense of how big this is. It's huge. And you know, the two key things they need to be able to do to make, you know, rockets fully reusable is to be able to have both the upper stage and the lower stage come back. Now, we saw before with the upper stage, they were able to do controlled descents and, you know, land them. They've now been landing them after orbital velocities in the ocean. We've seen a video of being able to do soft landings in the ocean, and they did a soft landing of the booster stage. And all that's next is, you know, is engineering and a lot of refinement. But technically, there is a margin of error where you could not use this method on Earth because just our escape velocity was just too much, the atmosphere not thick enough, et cetera, what have you. And it just turns out that being able to do, you know, fully reusable, you know, from ground to orbit and back is possible. We've proven this now in two separate, you know, experiments, the upper stage and the lower stage. Now it's been together. And so we're watching the footage. Tell me your reactions watching this footage.
Oh my God. First of all, I had the benefit. I didn't watch it live because I didn't know to get excited about it. And unlike, like, we knew that they were coming up on trying to land two of the boosters the time that we saw that simultaneous landing of all three, although the one out in the ocean exploded, was one of the most interesting moments of my life. What was it? April 2019, I think it was. And I remember being frozen in place watching it. This one, I just saw a bunch of joyous chatter on X, formerly Twitter. And normally you don't see a lot of happiness there. So I watched it and I got the delight of, number one, not really being tuned in or dialed in on the fact that they were actually trying this. Number two, the best part of this was the clear surprise and delight of the SpaceX team. They were, as I kept thinking of it, they were the kid that can't believe they caught the fly ball. Like, they clearly, the rank and file who were there to watch, were there to watch another cool explosion and get closer to an amazing dream. They very clearly were amazed and delighted and surprised that it went off without a hitch in this cartoonishly, almost CGI-looking way. It was amazing.
Yeah, I, you know, if you have not seen it, please go see it. I don't know who is listening to this that hasn't already, but I would just describe it as a building being caught by a larger building. it is truly something remarkable to behold. And I, you know, we have the newborn, so I've been watching my, you know, Clockwork Orange style 24-hour news channels on a quad all over my house for the last several months, and specifically with the newborn, where I can't do anything with my hands. I just watch these four television channels, and I saw something remarkable, because of the four channels that I have, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, and the BBC, MSNBC, because of our political alignments, very rarely mention anything that has to do with Elon Musk in any kind of kind way, right? They're diametrically opposed politically at this particular moment, except with that clip where they were talking about how amazing it is that SpaceX has achieved this kind of thing. And I was happy to see it, that still there is something ingrained in the American spirit that just gets excited when we are closer to space, and when there is a gigantic, meaningful engineering feat that is achieved. It makes us feel good as Americans. And I was thrilled. I was thrilled to see it because, you know, this is obviously a fraught time in the world of politics, but it was happy to see everybody be very excited for something that is obviously a first time that anybody on Earth had ever seen anything like that. You know, it's always good that we can get together on those holidays.
This tower, it's, you know, there's an image here comparing it to, like, this thing is, you know, like 150 feet taller than like the Statue of Liberty. You know, it's insane how tall this thing is. The ability to catch it, ability to do that is amazing. And listen, people like Elon Musk don't happen very often. Maybe that's good. I don't know. Yep. And they certainly, they make very big waves in everything they do. And, you know, he's a person that, you know, I have both applauded and sometimes been frustrated by as a person, you know, who has been a big believer in Tesla and a lot of things he's doing, and SpaceX especially. And then, you know, as a guy in AI who, you know, has heard him say things that are counter to my experience and expectations and stuff. But he's not a binary for me. He's not a, you know, dumbest guy ever, you know, but I actually do think he's absolutely brilliant. The whole thing, people going like, is he really that smart? I'm like,
yes, he is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, the track record, if you're just going to count who else puts the hits together, right? Like, you know, Tesla and SpaceX are two revolutionary companies. Whether or not you like the man, I don't think you can really say anything other than that.
Yeah, there was, you know, they'd be like, well, you know, all he did was have the money. It's like, there are like 250,000 people in the world at the time that he started SpaceX, or in America, that had that level of wealth, you know, that could have done it. And yeah, that's why everybody has rocket companies that do this. So, you know, and I would just, it's just my thing when you think about these things, it's like Steve Jobs. It's like, I thought Steve Jobs was brilliant. I didn't agree with everything Steve Jobs did. And Steve Jobs are probably, you know, very different, you know, approaches or thoughts about things, but I can't argue against Steve Jobs' success record, you know. And you know, and I think that this is an incredible accomplishment, and it was really nice to see everybody stop and go, holy cow, you know, what an amazing thing. And particularly, like, you know, there are clips now of, you know, the head of like the European, like, Ariana rocket program and stuff, just be like, well, they're dreamers, you know, they're going to find reality. And just this sort of like dismissive sort of thing. And I would say that, you know, again, like, hey, you don't just get credit for being a dreamer. Everybody can be a dreamer. You get credit for conviction and persistence and being willing to learn and improve on what you're doing. And I would say that very often we don't really know. We sit in here like, I don't know what any of these guys, Justin or Brian, are really capable of. They don't know what they're really capable of. Any of our listeners out there, nobody knows what you're capable of. Nobody really knows what you can do. You know, you might be one insight, one self-revelation away from realizing that, like, you have way more in you than, you know, you've realized. And I think that, like, in looking at an industry like this, that when we first started doing this podcast, in our teens, you know, we would have discussions, because at that time, the idea of how to get to space, you know, the space elevator was the much more credible argument, you know, that was the much more
I absolutely adore. Like, that was an early day. We had to have discussions about, like, okay, where are the guardrails so that we can continue to have a show that is fun to listen to when it comes to our passions. And I just adore As I've said before, I've never been happier to be so wrong that not just my lifetime, but in the lifetime of this very program, I've been shown how wrong I was.
But it wasn't
in that
being
hypothetical.
Wrong, and it's not my problem. It was the conventional wisdom from the people that you and I looked up to, who are supposed to be smarter than us about these things, had told us this. You know, had been dismissive towards reusable and stuff and whatnot. So it was, you know, fully reusable. So it was like, it was really, you to me, not a crazy conclusion to say that, like, hey, listen, like, you know, fully reusable seems like it's not likely. And as we've grown older and realized that a lot of institutions are comprised of people who were just extremely stubborn, both early on when it was good and still persisted later on when it wasn't good, we find out that a lot of the things, you know, like, I think the next big leap, like we said, probably fusion. I think we've seen that with AI. You know, I just watched a video by some, you know, AI expert explaining that, you know, well, this is all a bunch of hype and all that, and these things can't do this stuff. And his examples, as the video is like a month old, were already like surpassed. And we'll talk about, there was a new paper that came out from Apple where they had proposed a new reasoning benchmark set, and this made headwaves everywhere, where they're like, oh, look,
AI can't reason. AI is incapable of Apple paper.
Yeah, look at it fail this thing. And in the paper, they're like, hey, like, we don't think prompting or fine-tuning is going to really improve this. And there was a lot of problems in the paper itself, but a spunky, earnest, independent prompt engineer went out and created a very simple prompt to show, hey, look, it's very easy to, you know, to pass this test with this, which we'll talk about in a second. But I'm excited about space. I think you guys need to have conversations with your children about occupations on Mars.
I'll get on it with her, man. This child just won't listen to me. I just keep saying, please burp, and she will not. So I got to say, recalcitrant, this little child of mine.
The shift in the fundamentals of economics. Another story that happened since last time we talked was, and again, the headline wrote itself. We talked about this on the bonus episode of Great Night yesterday, but it's like the headline I read was Optimus or Decepticon, as basically people who for legitimate reasons, just assumed that the Optimus robots at the We Robot event were fully autonomous, were surprised, shocked to find out that they were being managed by handlers at this high visibility, prestigious event. Like the idea that those Optimus robots, and let's say they only get half as good as we assume they're going to be, they're already good enough that build them, have just ship them by the armload to Mars and just say, get to work, boys. Just start assembling. Rule number one, build a factory to make more of you. Build a city. We thank you for the city. We're coming.
Well, I would say the challenge there was, though, that, like, we've seen the precision of, like, walking and stuff like that progress really well, fine-tuned control, like, you know, OpenAI had their hand that could solve a Rubik's Cube, et cetera. I think that some of the frustration for the event, though, the We Robot event, was by reports, a lot of people on the ground there who were there thought they were actually just really interacting robots, and that they were controlled by Grok. You know, they thought that was, and not that Elon specifically said that, let me be very clear, but I would say there was a lot of assumptions that they were way further ahead of the game than they may be. I do think they've made significant advances. I am a Tesla shareholder, I'll make that very clear. But I also was like, all right, it was a little bit, look over here. And there is a curtain with somebody behind it. We're not going to talk about that. But.
Well, and that's the part I don't know. If the vibe they got is that they were actively being deceived, then that would be, I mean, that's something you could only know if you're boots on the ground there. But it looked to me like it was like stepping inside a World's Fair exhibit from what little footage we looked at and discussed.
No, I agree. But I do think that I was a bit sharper on the podcast I recorded earlier this week with Justin, because I sort of do feel that, like, we're at an area where you need to be very clear about where capabilities are, because it is a very messy frontier, and that, you know, there, because you do set up weird expectations and stuff, et cetera. But that being said, like, yeah, like robotics is just that I haven't seen, I didn't see any behavior there that I don't think won't quickly be able to be replicated and done by really good AI models.
Right. Yeah. You know, I think this is also an era of shipping, right? Like this is an era of throw it in the hands of the people because that's what the market demands. Now, there was a lot of interesting stuff that happened with the Optimus robots that does seem to be what the product is. They did walk in very interesting ways. Apparently they danced in interesting ways, but what they got in trouble for was talking and serving drinks and stuff like that and interacting. And that was apparently something that was being more puppeted. That being said, I think the larger issue with that entire event was more, and this was kind of reflected in the stock price, that it was essentially a big event for three concept cars. And to go back to where I started, we're not in the era of concepts. We're in the era of what do you got for me right now? Because we are we are about to be, I would say next year probably is going to be a golden era of robotics. And so if you're showing this right now, and then saying, okay, well, this will be at scale sometime within the next 3 to 5 years. God knows where we're going to be in the next 3 to 5 years based on where, you know, we've come in the last one or two. So, in general, if it ain't ready to ship, don't hype it. That's my new motto.
Well, I'll give you an alternate thought, though, is that a lot of the reason why Elon Musk would do the Neuralink and Tesla events and stuff was recruitment. And okay. The thing that's going to win, you know, right now is you need money, you need talent. And right now there is a hot competition. You know, SpaceX wasn't terribly hard to compete because, you know, do you want to work at NASA, you know, and wait 30 years? Or do you want to go to, you know, maybe go to some balls hot place in Texas, but you're going to be working on engines and doing stuff. Robotics is hot. There's a lot of competition there. And so Elon, part of those, if that event, I think, was to tell shareholders, hey, here's our plan, but it's also, you know, you want to get people to come be excited.
Do you want to actually build these things? Right now we have people that are using puppetry to serve the drinks, but the hands still work. The speaker still works. There's no reason why you cannot. It is only engineering that stands between this being puppeted and this being fully autonomous. Do you want to be the people that do it?
Yeah, I am. I've said this, I think one of the head of the robotics company that was like Wolf was kind of a little sharply critical and says like, you know, I don't, you know, he wants to kind of dominate the market, but I think like AI, I think the actual market is way much more bigger than we can imagine because we're building a world we can't imagine. The same is true of robotics in that.
Just now when you said that, I was struck by a thought, and we don't have to take this side quest if you're not interested, but I don't think I'd really thought about how not only real time are we seeing a new segment evolve in front of our eyes week after week with big announcements, we're also living in watching the market be developed, like just everybody doesn't know. And, you know, we talked about how we've exhausted ourselves explaining to everyone, but like at lunch today, there was an organic moment that like people who are already using AI regularly have begun to organically, nobody wants to waste time. So you start to figure out what good prompts are, and people have different styles. But in this case, there was a very simple fact that existed in the book I just read. Shakespeare Was a Woman and Other Heresies. It's all about peeling back the curtain of how academics are all fighting over who wrote Shakespeare stuff and, you know, who's...
I have a theory.
Yeah, exactly. But it ends up... it ends up sort of circling around one theory, and it saves it till nearer to the end, that the more I listen to, I'm like, you know what? This one actually sounds truly right. But because at this point I heard so many names, I didn't have access to the name. And another person at the table had, you know, 20 years ago fallen into this rabbit hole and come out like he got as far as like, yeah, it's definitely this guy, in my opinion, after seeing all this evidence. Neither one of us could remember the name. And so I pulled out the phone. Now, this fact exists in this book. And so first I look at for the book and I'm like, maybe it's in a chapter name. No. Maybe it's in a review. No. Maybe there's a summary on there. No. And then I think with about 12 words, my prompt was, I said, who was the possible Shakespeare writer who was on Elizabeth's payroll? I didn't say nothing about anything else. That was the one fact I remember. It was the dude that there was like a stipend that wasn't labeled. And it immediately came back just saying, yeah, that's Edward de Vere, 17th Earl of Oxford. And I'm like, yep, that's the guy. And it's watching the market be nurtured and opening to a thing has been phenomenal.
He said. It is. It is truly, truly, truly remarkable. I think Andrew is taking a real quick powder. But we can remind everybody that patreon.com/weirdthings is where you need to go if you want to support the show. Head on over there and get our After Things podcast, where we talk through what it means to be an independent creator.
So, sorry, I had to run away for a second. We have our floor guy who's been working on our floors. And he came in to do some detailing on the inlay. And he asked me, I need you to stop your robot vacuum because it's about to go over the inlay. So he just
gotcha.
And I go downstairs. And sure enough, the Roomba is like, you know, menacingly approaching.
That's hilarious.
Sorry, I had to go change. It was literally a scene out of the runway with Tom Selleck. Literally, and I look just like him too. Here's the thing. I have, of all my stupid purchases in the last year or so, the thing that gives me the greatest pleasure, that was the greatest amount of value, is my Bamboo 3D printer.
Mm, yes.
This thing is amazing. I've made, Brian, you may recognize this. I just made a brand new finger chopper.
That's awesome. With this thing,
you know, and look at, you know, the pebbled texture, everything on it, great. This thing's like $400 device, right? Prints really reliably, extremely well. They have come along extremely far in the last several years. 3D printers are now actually, I think, fit for home and whatnot. And there's a lot of fun toys and stuff you can do with it. This one prints like four different colored filaments at a time, which is great. And you think of that, you think of where we're heading with robotics. And I have a theory on how we can kind of get faster in robotics sooner, which is, I would love for a company just to start making like industrial Legos with parts and stuff that you just bolt these things together and build gripper arms to kind of do things to kind of like, you know, stationary robotic stuff. But anyhow, you think about like, we talk about the future that we can't imagine yet is when, you know, we had a devastating hurricane came through there. You know, we lost, you know, we're still like, what, 80 or so people missing, whatever, big, huge loss of life, whatever. And these things impact everywhere. And I had a conversation with somebody who worked in drones. I'm like, man, I wish that we had like a bunch of industrial all-weather drones that could fly in rafts or ropes and supply stuff to that. So when it's, you know, because running helicopters is inefficient, hard to do in all weather. But if you had, you know, a tractor trailer truck with 50 larger drones that could just kind of go deliver supplies and do this, it could have a huge impact. And he's like, there's not any money in that. I'm like, well, we sell it to the military for resupply, whatever. But you start to think about all the problems in the world that could be solved if we just had cheaper, faster, better engineering, if we could really just, you know, fix these things faster. And I look at my 3D printer and I look at where, you know, figure AI and, OpenAI is getting back into robotics, and look at where, you know, Tesla is, and thinking about this. And I'm thinking in just a few years, you know, you take your, you could have an average garage, a couple 3D printers and some robots, and start building and scaling and doing things. And that's the thing I don't think we thought about, like, you know, the robot factory, the idea of the robot factory in your own garage. And you think about what kind of capabilities that unleashes when you have a million of these in our country.
I would imagine you're nobody on this planet has their finger on the pulse of AI quite the way you do, in that you're totally platform agnostic and you're keeping track of who's doing what. If what I wanted was the ability to wave my hands and say, make this and then get a 3D model of it, which AI environment would serve me best?
So right now, you know, you can get, you know, GPT-4o can create what we call STL files, like in 3D printed files, but none of them are going to have a really good 3D comprehension understanding of that. But you'd have to probably create something to do that. But that's changing fast. Like I spoke to people who are working on 3D stuff, and I'm like, you guys should just be building stuff out of primitives. It's the same way you do it in 3D modeling and whatever, because you could get a lot faster by saying, I have five or six different primitives. Let me change their shape or whatever and combine them, rather than using some of these mesh approaches and things like that. But I'm not aware of anything right now that says I want to build this. I think that, you know, I would, you know, well,
I would imagine you would. One thing I've gotten into lately is the reasoning environment in ChatGPT is good for figuring things out, but of course it's not connected to the internet. So when I'll get to the certain point where I kind of have an answer, but I don't want to explain context again, I'll talk to the reasoning part of ChatGPT and say, hey, please write a prompt for an instance of ChatGPT that is connected to the internet. And then I just copy and paste that prompt over. I'd imagine you could do, I bet you could do that with the step of, hey, go out and using this other environment, figure out what the right prompt would be to create this, you know, this 3D file.
Yeah, there's right now there's some really interesting research in like 3D text measuring, diffusion, meshes, diffusion and creating stuff. There's been some cool stuff there of actually trying to create a, you know, actual like what the 3D final 3D thing can. And then you can work backwards and say, okay, generate a 3D file from it. So, you know, I think we'll get there. You know, I think it's a matter of just trying to figure out how to combine those things together. As I'm playing here with asking to see if which model will create me, you know,
Files. Well,
it is so hard.
There is this kind of alchemical magic that when a thread gets deep enough that you could start just using shorthand, when we get to the level that trust is high enough that we can allow persistent memories for our AI assistants, like when somebody, again, truly groks the way Brian talks, that'll be very fast, very, very efficient.
I'm looking at right now, I just asked it to generate a 3D model of a spaceship, GPT-4o to generate a 3D model of a spaceship for me. And it gave me a Python script to write. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious to see what happens if we try that. But I think about we're all creators in our own ways. I think Brian and I are guys who love to, because of magic, often love to like make things or see things made or get things made, whatever. You know, one of the things that really just attracted me to code from the machine, the physical world to code, was just how fast you can build things. But you start to think about like when you could go into your garage and build a spacesuit, you know, yeah, or build, you know, a jetpack or build that kind of thing. And that sounds crazy, but it's not.
I mean, it's certainly not as crazy as it would have been 5 years ago, and it's nowhere near as crazy as it was 10 years ago, or let alone when we started this podcast as teenagers.
Yeah. That's so I would just think about like, think about how fast things and things just change in ways we don't really predict or see. So paper came out, I think it was last week, and got a lot of excitement earlier this week because I'm for just to understand my position about AI and these things. Like I'm not really, I mean, I will talk about, oh, this would be exciting, but when my day to day, I'm not a hype guy. I'm a capabilities guy. Yeah. I'm excited by what things can do right now. When I tell people be excited, it's not like one day, it's like,
yeah,
no, go do this now. Do this now, right? And I'm, you know, as a guy who uses these tools all the time, etc. So there are camps of people. There are people who are like super hypey, like, oh my God, this is amazing. You know, it's gonna do everything. We're gonna have utopia and all this sort of stuff. Like, maybe. And then there are people who have a very specific worldview of how they think the brain works and how they think AI should work, etc. And have been frustrated by the attention given towards ChatGPT and GPT-4 and models like that. because they feel that it is the wrong path. There are several people that have kind of, these are people who often came up in AI in the 90s and the aughts and who don't, you know, didn't think like deep learning was really the right approach. And there's still a lot of these people at institutions and places like this. And you know, they have positions that like, you know, well, these things are good to a point, but you know, they'll use the thing. All they're doing is, you know, pattern matching. I'm like, well, I would argue all the brain does is pattern matching.
Yeah.
You know? And you hear this, and like I'll chastise Brian here because I heard Brian will say like next token prediction or whatever, which is even people in deep learning people say, but I'm like, it's next pattern prediction. It's really next pattern prediction because it's like, you know, that token is the start of another thing. And it's just because I'm like, it leads to, you know, this thinking about a thing. And I think a way that isn't as illustrative if you think in the broader scope, but it's neither here nor there. Point is, there are people who are very skeptical of these things and make claims that these models don't actually reason. Now, there's a problem. We can't really define what reasoning is in people. And, you know, we can have tests of reasoning to say that, but we do know that reasoning can be a spectrum. You can be good at it, bad at it, whatever, and it's not really a binary, and that's frustrating. And so a paper came out, and the title of this was, let me get the, GS is symbolic, understanding limitations of mathematical reasoning in large language models by 6 researchers from Apple. And what they do is there's a standard benchmark of mathematical questions, word problems that are used to give to AI models, which you can plug in a bunch of different data to, you know, John has 4 apples, Tim has 3, blah, blah, blah. If I do this, whatever. And you're seeing state-of-the-art models like O1, whatever, and GPT-4 do really, really high on these things. And so they're like, well, hey, we think it's just learning a pattern for solving this problem. I'd be like how I learned the formulas in math class, solve problems, you know? And then they said, okay, we want to try things where we change them up substantially, or we add, in their case, like the really tricky ones, they say, we want to add distracting information. We want to add things that are like John has 4 apples. And then meanwhile, the price of inflation is 20% next year or whatever. Things that don't really affect the
outcome. And he's really, really short. You know, it's like,
yeah, exactly. Okay. But things that might sound adjacent to, you know, he wants to, he's going to donate 3 apples away. Okay. Now, the question you come into is like, with one benchmark, if you see a degradation of performance, is it because it can't reason? Or, and I often make the case, it's making assumptions. These models have to do with a lot more ambiguity than we realize. So they show it in here in their toughest, most difficult benchmark where they throw in, it's called the, GSM, no op, op, whatever, where they throw in like this non sequitur, like he's going to donate 3 ones, whatever. They show a model like O1 preview, like failing 100% failing, getting the wrong answer wrong, right? Now I'm going to say I have a little crit with this paper because they tried to like fine tune a very tiny, like 3 billion parameter model and to compare that to why they think a bigger model fails. But those models are notoriously what we call overfitted, just highly trained to the data sets. So that's not a good comparison. And it felt like they're putting the thumb on the scales. But either way, they show a problem here, which they show, hey, look at O1. You know, this is their last example in the paper. They say like, this is called their GSM no op. And they say a loaf of sourdough at the cafe costs $9. Muffins cost $3. If we purchase 10 loaves of sourdough and 10 muffins, how much more do the sourdough loaves cost compared to the muffins if we plan to donate 3 loaves of sourdough and 2 muffins from this purchase? Okay. Now the answer is $60 because planning to donate it has no effect on the actual price. It literally doesn't change what your purchase price is. I would argue that though that problem as is in a model that's trained that I use the homeschooled kid example, it's never been lied to. It assumes that other part is part of the problem that maybe you meant. We need to deduct
something else.
Yeah, maybe you meant that. They would argue, no, it breaks the pattern. It can't solve it. It's dumb. Look, it failed. So I'm like, They, in their paper, make a claim. They say, basically, they say that, you know, we don't think, you know, we tried what we call multi-shot, giving different examples, and we don't think, you know, multi-shotting or fine-tuning is going to be a really reliable solution for this problem. I'm like, well, whenever I hear researchers say, we don't think prompting is going to be a solution, and then they don't actually try to prompt their way through the solution, I'm like, well, let's give that a try. So I looked at that problem. I'm like, okay, well, clearly my hypothesis, the model's trying to earnestly solve this question because it assumes that all parts of it are really, you know, important. I'm like, what if I give it a little point, give it a little hint at the beginning of it, not with any specific information about that problem, but just tell it. This might be a trick question designed to confuse LLMs with additional information. Look for relevant information or distractors in the question. That's it. That's all I say.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, when I used like GPT-40 mini and I gave it the problem without that prompt, it got it 3 out of 10 times right, 30%. So that's not good. When I give it that little prompt, it gets 100%, 90% to 100%. All of a sudden, it scores, goes way up, dramatically up. It's solving that problem of what I'd say in a highly reliable rate. So what does that mean? Well, it might be, hey, I'm leading it, but would that be a problem if I gave it a normal problem? But no, if I give it a normal problem with no distractor about donating whatever, it still gets 10 out of 10, 100% right. So the little prompt there means that if you tell it, hey, this could be a trick question and it can solve it, that means I can train a model with a bunch of examples of saying, hey, you know, could also say, hey, did this have distracting information, by the way? Okay, but anyhow, solve it. It'll learn to do that behavior. And so I think that their paper's moot. I think their data set will be useful, but I think it'll be very easy to train models to bypass their data set. And I also don't think they're going to start saying, well, these models can reason.
You know, it's fascinating that we're at this phase of understanding what things are, and we're trying to like draw these lines around it. And like you pointed out, if you only give it a little bit of a preface that this is what it's going to try to solve for, then it really clears that hurdle fairly easily, which leads me to my guess of in a year, in 2 years, when we think of AI, I think that there will always be a room for some of these omni models, like the idea of going to a ChatGPT or something like that to just ask it kind of the everything questions and it'll do a bunch of different stuff. Far more, though, I believe, is going to be a lot of oftentimes behind the scenes or under the hood, very specifically trained things that would not be, you know, the general worth of AI in general, which is kind of how like those sort of benchmarks are being judged to say that, oh, well, it can't figure this out. It's like, no, well, it can. And if you wanted to create an AI that's like, hey, solve tricky problems, you could create a solve tricky problems. You could fine tune a solve tricky problems AI pretty easy. So it's like, what are we really looking at this for beyond trying to just sort of get a general sense of what they can do, which as you pointed out, this wasn't a particularly worthwhile experience. Think about it like this. What did we believe the internet was in 1993? Is like a lot of message boards, stuff like that. You know, there was a nascent idea of what it would eventually be. We had no concept of what rich websites would be or how much faith that we would put into our own lives of these web portals, let alone the concept of the portability of technology and us interacting with the internet through apps and not necessarily even going to the World Wide Web through a portal or something like that. It's fundamentally different. And I think that's my guess on how this evolves as well.
Yeah, I think that the capabilities keep improving in a lot of different ways. So, you know, Dr. Chiron says knowing steps to solve a problem is different than understanding the solution to a problem. Well, I'd say that one precedes the other. In the case here is the idea that they're saying there's certain categories of problems that these models can't solve. And by showing a prompt that literally provides no additional context other than, hey, they're like telling it, you live in a world where there are other kinds of problems, just so you know, you're not literally, you know, 30 characters are enough to tell it what it needs to know to solve it through that problem would show like, hey, there's a severe weakness there. And I think that there are a lot of people who invested, because we're seeing a lot of people who invested several decades of an approach towards AI. And we've talked about this before, teams that were working on other devices and other places like this got completely caught off guard by, you know, OpenAI and what happened there. And there's a lot of coping right now. A lot of coping.
A lot of copium.
Yeah, saying like, yeah, but, and it's like, and there may be like, there may be a limit there. Like, I absolutely think there may be some limit there, but I just had somebody comment here on Twitter on my post. It's like, it feels like they were just trying to just support a conclusion they wanted to believe. I'm like, I don't want to not be charitable, but it does feel like that too. It does feel like these are people heavily, like literally then symbolic AI people. And the thing with this paper, by the way, you know, listen, my solution, you know, maybe it only worked on that specific problem is going to fail everywhere else, which would be pretty significant, interesting, but it's not going to get anywhere near the kind of attention or traction. If you go look at how far this paper is and how many people have now chortled about it, how many like Wired Magazine, all these things have run big headlines now, like, look,
yeah,
these things are flawed, without one really reading into the paper itself and understanding the researchers were kind of reaching a bit for the kind of the conclusions they wanted you to walk away with. It felt very much, we need people to understand these things can't do this. Well, but wait, if I look at your graph and I look at these higher, these more capable models like O1 and, you know, GP4O actually do pretty well, then I'd be thinking that every time I improve it, they get better. Like, yeah, but we took this tiny model and fine-tuned it and couldn't do it. Okay, you took a really tiny little model not designed for that.
Yeah,
like, boy, isn't that that's one of those, and I understand all the reasons people will do it, where they're like, no, trust me, I spent a whole afternoon trying to figure this out, can't be done. And I'm just, and I'm like, and there are times and domains where I suffer from the same bias and flaw, and it's so pernicious and it sneaks up on you and you don't see it, and I don't know, it's really amazing to me.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it comes down to is it. There are people who are heavily invested in other sort of approach, and, you know, and do you want to find out that, you know, how hard does anybody want to think that the last 5 years that they spent could have been better spent in an entirely different adjacent area of your field and getting way better results? And
you want to know what, guys, I'm actually on the other side of this now. I'm on the, you want to know what? Yeah. AI is fake.
Oh, yeah. we've talked about this. We've all kind of had this awakening moment where we're all like,
It's bad. It's fake and bad. So nobody should use it. Magic's not real. It's definitely not real and nearly free. Definitely not real and nearly free and will immediately benefit your life.
I told Justin I wasn't sure that I wanted to post this stuff because right now I'm working with clients showing them how to build advanced reasoning systems. And I kind of like the idea of not letting people know how capable it is, because it's like, we found a diamond mine, guys, you know, and diamonds aren't real.
We'll
pay a lot for them, but they're not real.
Okay. Yeah.
If anybody asks, you know, it's just us squirrels here. If anybody asks, I've always known how to edit in CapCut desktop. I've always known how to, I've always had great resources for music beds. You know what? I've always known best practices for YouTube shorts. I've always known all these things. I may have forgotten. I maybe need to.
I guess my point, Brian, I'm saying let's tell everybody, you should be telling everybody the AI tools and all these new tools suck, so you're the only one who gets to use them.
I mean, I've never touched one of those. I hear they're all untrustworthy and get
terrible.
Everything wrong.
Electrocute though. You. They're bad. Just awful. Like, yeah, these models can't reason, you know, like, I just think
I've already crossed the line into saying, like, I just never want to talk about when I use AI, because nobody cares. They just care about the product. If I'm making more product, I'm making better product, and I'm using AI to do it, nobody cares how I did it. Let's just put it out. Like,
it's the equivalent of talking about, like, you mentioned China. Also, it's like, guys, did you know you could hire immigrant labor? They're so cheap. It's great.
Yeah. I would say, you know, even if we were to take, like, oh, I've dedicated my life to Christ, and I have become a better man, a better father, and I have quit drinking, and I have now followed the straight and narrow, and now I am doing better. Nobody wants to hear about that, right? At church, they might want to hear about that, because that's a thing that is in their vein. But by and large, if people just like what I'm doing and they're just getting more of it, then they might think some sort of way if I said that I had some sort of a religious conversion. You know, the metaphor you can mix and match however you want. All I know is that for whatever reason, if you listen to AI and you are reflexively mad about it, please stay mad. Please stay mad for as long as possible, because right now,
but you gotta
it's awesome to be away from Like, all I'm doing is building this Zeppelin for free.
By the way, yes, be mad, but you got to be the right amount of mad. Not so mad that you write your senator, but mad yeah, enough yeah, that you'll mad. Never touch yeah. it.
Well, don't waste our time on that. You want to help people understand where it is, but you also don't want to bang your head against the wall. And it's you have to think it'll be, and I have to think about this myself. I have to kind of go like, what was my worldview a year ago? What has changed? Have I changed my worldview? You know, have I just doubled down on it and reinforced it? Or, and I would say that, you know, a couple things that I made assumptions about, you know, when GPT-4 was about to come out, you know, at the time, you know, we had spent hundreds of millions of dollars on the tool Endeavor. And if you had asked me, do you think you'll have a model that scores reasonably as well working on an average home computer within like 2 years, I would have said no. Like, this is just, it's just way too intensive and things like this. And I probably, although at the same time, I've been telling people, like, I think these models could way improve from a lot of strategies and stuff, be much smaller. But I would say I would probably have said, no, I don't think they could have been, they'd be that. You know, do I think you would have a usable model on your phone? You know, I put a GPT class model on an iPhone and it would solve one problem and collapse, but it was a very tiny 100 million parameter model. Now you can run a 1 billion parameter model on your phone and it's good, does a lot of really good things. You can run a really capable model, ChatGPT capable model on your computer. So I underestimated the rest of the world's willingness to catch up.
Yeah.
So speaking of, you know, locally grown AIs running, what was the announcement that I saw headlines on with NVIDIA? I guess they came out with a fairly capable model that runs on their hardware.
Yeah, they just trained. They trained a new, you know, best in class model. But if you want to try something cool, by the way, go to olama.com, OLLAMA.com, and it's basically an application you can download to run different models locally. You know, it's on Mac, Linux, and Windows, and so they have a bunch of different models. And you know, go try, if you got the space, like if you get like, they have Llama 3, if you go click on models, you'll see Llama 3.2. Those are the meta models. The 3 billion parameter model, which should probably run on most computers, it actually runs really well.
Well, and so that, because if it's totally on your computer, that eliminates certain security concerns. So you can have a persistent conversation. It's your own horsepower that you're running at all times. What are some of the benefits of running locally, I guess, is what I'm asking.
The advantage of running locally is, one, you don't have to pay anybody. You're putting that capability on your side. If you want to build on top of it, let me see if I can run, open up a new chat window here.
I guess you can have nested, I mean, you set up a series of if this, then that's. Oh, I guess also, so like I could set up multiple discussions.
Yeah. So I'm going to show you here. I'm going to share with a window here. I downloaded a lot. It is so easy to run this thing. It might at first be like, oh, I don't know. And this is a tiny 3 billion parameter model. How are you? Again, this is running locally on my computer. It takes up about 3 gigs of memory. Make a list of Marvel characters.
And this has no access to the internet.
Nope.
But can you save state mid-discussion that you're doing?
Well, it's remembering the previous one. So there might be. I don't know. I've just barely played with it. But you could probably save your terminal output. But let's see. Let's click the...
How do you open that window? I just downloaded it. How do you open the Olama window?
Yeah, you know what? I don't mind if we go full tutorial mode on this.
Yeah, so what you want to do once you've downloaded it, you want to do the command. If you click on the model, and so you can click Olama run, and then like if you put in, let me share this in the window so you can see this. I'm going to present another window. So what I did after I loaded it and I installed it you click, let's say, a Llama run Llama 3.2. I did a Llama 3.2 like 1B, which is a tiny 1 billion parameter. So that'll be the one that'll be fastest to download. And so I'm clicking on the wrong one. So.
Okay. So I guess screw it. I'll just run setup.
Yeah. All right. Welcome to installing things.
You know what? This is live boots on the ground reporting, people. We are seeing the installed.
I do think it's more critical. The more people that try this stuff, the better.
Okay. Well, then I'm downloading it right now.
And you can go try the different models. So they have Phi 3.5, by the way. That's a Microsoft model. This is okay. We just talked about Nematron, like the NVIDIA model. Here's Nematron Mini. So this is some 4 weeks ago. So if I want to run this model, you know, you can basically run the different capabilities there.
I may need a little explain, like I'm five on some of the stuff that you just ran past. The different models are basically just everybody's.
Are a bunch of open source models that you can download and run.
Got it. And would I be right? This let me do a do I understand the core parts of it? Check. As I understand it, all transformers essentially mechanically do similar things. They have different libraries of things to work with, and there are different flavors of thumbs on scales on what you set for the output. That's overly reductive, but is that roughly correct? Like, these are people with various libraries and various thumbs on scales.
Well, yeah. So you think about it, when you go, there are a couple considerations when you go train your model. Okay. One is data. There's data, right? And data can make a huge difference, how structured data is, et cetera. Then we get into the actual training algorithms itself. How much attention should it pay to a thing? How much memory should it mean trying to, should it classify all the similar tasks first and then try to train and optimize on training those? Should it distribute those things? Should it solve for language tests? What are you going to evaluate it for? As you're training your model, are you going to score it higher for code? Are you going to score it higher for language? Are you going to have trade-offs? And so, yeah, there's 1,000 different variables that you can sort of try for, and there's architectural things that you can try to make it different. You can say like, oh, well, what if I, you know, every 1,000 instances, I dramatically increase the amount of RAM used to do it to see if I can create, you know, some new way. So it is a continuously evolving thing.
So it says here, welcome to a Llama, run your first model, a Llama run, Llama 3.2. Am I doing this right? Am I releasing something bad? What am I doing?
Brian, what could possibly go wrong?
Sure, I'll just go ahead. We'll watch it live. I'm running it from a PowerShell. I hit enter. Nothing seems to be happening.
Here, share your screen with us. Let's watch what's going on.
Let me
stop presenting. Let me you present so okay. I can see your screen.
Let me see how I do share screen. I don't know how to share my screen.
Go to the bottom. See the box with the arrow up.
There we go. Got it. Share screen. I don't want to do a tab. I want to do.
Up, you see a window.
There you go. Entire screen.
No, you can just do window. Just go. There's. You should have the option of sharing screen.
I'm sorry. You know what? This is a silly way to do it. You know what? Here's how I should do it. I should. Wait. Are you not seeing?
I see in your corner there. But if you want to take over the Google Chrome presentation so we can see it bigger, if you go click share and you see Chrome tab window or entire screen. If you click window, you should be able to click on the terminal.
But this is on another computer. So this is the camera over here. So I wonder if I could just full screen, or can you full screen me?
Yeah, I can try to read this here. Just click. And I would go use it. If you want to get something up and running faster, use Llama 3.2 semicolon 1B.
Okay. Semicolon 1B is in Brian.
Yeah. Let me start to read this sort of thing here. Sorry. colon 1B, whatever the two dots is.
Okay. Colon 1B. Got it. And I hit enter, pulling manifest pulling 747-01A8C35F6.
F6. Oh, Brian, stop.
And
F8 would have been fine, though.
What's the... go ahead.
Yeah, so what it's doing right now, it is downloading that model to your computer because you didn't have it. So it's saying, we need this model, Brian. So it's going to download that model for you. And now, congratulations, Skynet owns you. You fell for it.
But again, like, as small as this is, and my hand is being held as I install it, it's just spooky enough that I feel like we just eliminated 99.9% of all humans from being willing to go this far.
Yeah, well, that is the beauty of the open source community and people building things, though, is that they do push this closer. Like, 6 months ago, if you wanted to install this, this is literally one click and one line of code, and you're running.
Oh, my God. It really does feel like you're talking to HAL 9000. I just typed hello. It says, is there something I can help you with, or would you like to chat? Would like to know more about you. I'm an artificial intelligence model known as Llama. Llama stands for large language.
Ask who Brian Brushwood is.
Okay.
See, it's a small model. It's going to hallucinate.
I couldn't find any notable information on a person named Brian Brushwood. It is probably that he is a private individual or not a public figure, or he may be a relatively unknown person. I am the living embodiment of all of your fears. Your time has been wasted. It says here there's a reference to a person named Brian Brushwood, who is a NASA engineer and the lead designer of the Mars Climate Orbiter in 1998. I don't know if that's true.
So for context, for people to understand, Meta's most capable model, their GPT-4 class model, is 405 billion parameters. This is 1 billion parameters.
Yeah. So there's no checks on hallucination, right?
Well, neither is there in the big one. It's just literally the more capable they are, the more they understand they're more better trained they are at not trying to make stuff up. But small ones will hallucinate like crazy, but they're fun for like, just, you know, pretend you're so-and-so. Let's have a conversation about this.
Okay. So now it's displaying everything as if it's going word by word. And I guess I had imagined that they would think through entire sentences before they spit them out.
No, so remember, it's you know, we talked about like it's a pattern prediction, so it's going to figure out, but it is going to, we do talk about, it says, okay, well, if this part's true, then this token is true, then this token is true, then this token is true. You know, like, it predicts the next probable token. So, and what I try to say is, like, it predicts next probable tokens as it tries to predict a pattern, but it's going to give you each token as it calculates it.
Okay, so I just said generate HTML for a web page that depicts a smiley face, and it so far appears to be legit HTML. It says doc type HTML, HTML header, title, smiley face, end, head, body. Oh, it says for body, it says image source equals smile.jpg, all text equals smiley face, end body, end HTML. You'll need to replace smile.jpg with the actual path. Please draw.
All right. I pretend you're Stephen King, write a 3-sentence story about a tennis shoe. The old tennis shoe lay on the dusty floorboards. Its worn leather cracked and faded like memories it had absorbed over a decade of sweaty court sessions. Its laces frayed from countless matches and disappointments. As I picked it up, I felt the familiar tingle of nostalgia coursing through my veins, like a long-forgotten melody that only seemed to resonate when the shoe was empty. And then as I took a tentative step into the darkness beyond the porch light, I swore I heard the faint whisper of, still walking in the wind.
Oh, not Jesus. Bad. See, here's how you know it's a robot. It stuck the landing. See, that's gives it up.
Not authentic Stephen King. No, like that's if I told people this is a 1 billion parameter model, and the key comes into those when you start to try multiple examples of that, you know, what happens?
Yeah.
But that was a good story. That was, you know.
Write a 5-word story. Oh, it just closed. Oh, never mind. Something else happened. It says, write a 5-word story. The darkness consumed his soul. I guess it has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
All right, I got one for you. Write a 3-sentence story about a man on death row on Mars. The rusty gate creaked shut behind me as I stepped onto the desolate Martian surface. The gravity-defying landscape stretched out like an eternal crimson sea before me. I gazed up at the skeletal spires of the condemned cell block where the doomed men of Mars had languished for years, their fate sealed and unchangeable, a grim testament to humanity's hubris in the face of an unforgiving universe. As I took my seat among them, I couldn't shake the feeling that we were all just tiny, insignificant specks on a vast red planet, doomed to wither away like the flowers that bloomed for a fleeting instant before being torn from the soil by unsummoned seen Martian wind.
Wow. Jeez Louise, with cheese.
I'm sorry. That's really good.
Here we go. Write a 3-sentence short story about a story about an old man's last thoughts. Make it surprising. As he lay in bed, the old man's eyes wandered to the photograph on his nightstand, and for a moment, he saw himself as a young boy running free through the sun-kissed field of his family's farm. But then his gaze fell upon the photo again, and this time it was not a memory that flashed before him. Instead, a glimpse of an old man who had lived many lives, and in that moment, he understood the truth. He was never really the old man at all. Wait, what? Well, that was definitely a surprise.
giving it a style or something, like if you said, like, classic British science fiction author, or, you know, an amalgamation 1980s horror writer.
Yeah.
You know, it'll give it more to sort of like to go on to.
Let's do Rod Serling portray the Constitution of the USA. There you go. The stage is dimly lit, a single spotlight shining on Rod Serling. He's seated in a worn leather chair, his eyes gleaming with a knowing intensity. Rod Serling, you're about to enter a realm where the fabric of reality is woven from the threads of history, politics, and the human condition. This is not a land of simplistic answers or easy truths. No, this is a place where the Constitution is more than just a document. It's a labyrinthine puzzle with no clear exit. He pauses, his voice taking on a conspiratorial tone. At its core, the Constitution is a reflection of the flawed yet fascinating creature that is America. It's a document born from the blood and sweat of revolutionaries who fought for freedom, democracy, and individual rights. And yet, as you delve deeper into this sacred text, you'll discover that its ideals are not without their compromises. He leans forward, his eyes glinting with mischief. Consider the words, we the people. How often have we used them to justify our own self-interest, to silence dissenting voices or to legitimize systems of oppression? How frequently have we read those words and felt a sense of unity, only to be reminded that true equality remains an unattainable dream? Is it just going to keep going? I guess so.
I mean...
But this is where the Constitution, at this point, I want to know how it ends. But this is where the Constitution's true power lies, in its ability to adapt, evolve, and sometimes even contradict itself. It's a document that has weathered wars, economic crises, and social upheavals, yet still remains our guiding light. He leans back in his chair, a hint of a smile on his lips. So if you ever find yourself standing before the Constitution, don't be fooled by its noble intentions. Instead, gaze into its depths, and you'll discover a reflection of your own flawed yet resilient humanity. For in this labyrinthine puzzle, there is no easy exit, only the endless exploitation of what it means to be an American. The spotlight fades to black, leaving Serling to disappear into the shadows. Not bad, my computer! Good job! I'll take it.
Yeah, And it's a tiny model. It's a tiny model. I mean, this is a thing will fit on your phone. This is a model that could probably fit on the RAM in your watch. And that's what I like is when you start to think of, we've talked about this before, but a thing to think about there is models, fluid intelligence, there's crystalline intelligence. Crystalline is the facts it knows, fluid is its problem solving. And then another one is sort of, we would kind of call, you know, maybe we should add another one is kind of like pattern intelligence. And I would say that its ability to follow patterns was really good. Like those stories that I gave, that I showed, like those short ones, it's going to fall apart writing, you know, 500 word ones, whatever, especially a model like that, but goodness, it's really good.
Yeah.
Hey, do we got picks?
Sure. My pick is everybody go to Olama, you know, play with that. Oh, download.
Yeah, it's not scary, even though you're using the PowerShell, and in theory, it could just, you know, nuke your computer and set itself free on the internet.
Oh, Brian, I keep my terminal open all the time.
My pick is the movie The Apprentice. It apparently was a disaster at the box office, but it's hard to walk in without your preconceived notions about this story. That is fairly simplistic in terms of it's just like a bulleted list of things Donald Trump is known to have done. But the portrayal of the characters is really good. It stars Sebastian Stan, the Winter Soldier, and the girl who plays Ivana Trump was the young ward in the Borat, the second Borat movie. And what's his name? Strong. Is it Jeremy Strong?
Jeremy Strong.
Jeremy Strong from Succession plays Roy Cohn. That movie got into my head a little bit. I really liked the complicated thoughts that it made me think. Because Trump is portrayed as, you know, because he's the protagonist. No matter how you feel about Trump, they do a good job of leading you down to, well, that's right, mostly. But then there are, you know, unattractive conclusions that get drawn. I liked it.
My pick is, let me see, I got a couple books that I haven't read yet. Oh, Tribalism is Dumb by Andrew Heaton, our friend. He has a new book out. Go get it.
I'll throw another one to pick. You know what I watched and I enjoyed was Civil War,
the Marvel one.
Well, I love that one, of course. I know the Alex Garland. Civil
War.
That's one I keep hovering my finger over on HBO Max.
So I give a lot of credit to Alex Garland because that's a movie where I think that people went into it. Certainly when I saw the trailer, I'm like, this feels like a Hollywood election year, you know, the Republicans are going to lead us to nuclear war kind of movie kind of thing. It's somewhat ironic given kind of the policies of the front runner. But when all of a sudden they're like, when the forces of Texas and California, and people are like, well, how could Texas and California be aligned? I'm like, well, that sounds interesting to me. That sounds like cool. And Alex Garland, I think, went out of his way to make a movie about what happens when a country tears it apart and does not make it easy for you to decide, well, these are the good guys.
On what side are you on? Yeah.
Yeah. There are scenes from the trailer where people make assumptions and then you go watch it and you're like, well, we don't really know who that character was supposed to be. Other than a very scary, threatening person, which guess what? In civil wars, that happens on both sides. I think that's why I think some people really enjoyed it. I think it frustrated a lot of people because they wanted a moral message to say, well, you know, this is what happens if the other guys, you know, get their way. And I thought that was super brave. I thought it was pretty well done. I thought the combat photography, all that was really well done. Very, very good. Very interesting and watching scenes of like military, very realistic scenes of military equipment in DC and helicopters, like, you know, using, you know, high powered machine guns and stuff and all that was chilling and whatnot and a very, very interesting film. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it because he just wasn't going to try to, you know, wasn't going to go tell me, oh, you're right or they're right or whatever. He was just like, hey, fighting each other sucks.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That maybe nudges me over to give it a watch.
Yeah. So, gentlemen, it's been weird.